What's going on, people, man? You're tuning into episode 13 of the Is Not Easy podcast, man. We have a new guest in the building. Ayo, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me, Sam. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. How's your week been, man? All good?
Yeah, it's been all good. Busy. But, you know, busy for the right reasons.
Of course.
Protecting more families and whatnot. Doing good work.
Of course, of course. How have you... This is like a question that I've asked quite a few of my guests, yeah. How have you found, like, start to the year? I guess now we're in the third month of the year. We're like approaching a full quarter. How have you found it, man, overall? All aspects of life?
I'll say it's been good. It's been challenging. And it's like, you know, this year, you know, I've decided to take things at, you know, 12 weeks at a time. So, you know, sometimes we think of the 12 months and then get lost in it, and it's like it's only you know, this, that, the other. And it's like, whereas if you actually break things into shorter sprints, you're probably able to do more because you're going to get to the end faster. And it's like, you know, do you know what I mean? Versus you're trying to imagine trying to sprint for 12 months. Do you know what I mean? That's a marathon. Like, you can't sprint a marathon.
It's quite interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember a few weeks ago, might be months now, actually, yeah. Someone said that, like, you know, with their yearly goals, instead of doing it by, like, a year, they do it by a quarter instead. So you kind of, it's like a focused period of, like, a particular objective. You get to accomplish it, and then you move on. And if not, cool, it might spin into the next quarter, but it's still, like, a focused period, opposed to a whole 12-month period. So it's quite interesting that you say that, yeah. I wanted to jump into some quick-fire questions.
Go ahead.
Yeah, quick five questions. So, what's the first thing you do in the morning and the last thing you do before bed?
How first thing in the morning are we talking?
Like the first thing, as soon as you wake up.
As soon as I wake up, I snooze my alarm.
Yeah, and the last thing before bed?
Last thing before bed is have a conversation with my wife.
Yeah.
And then...
I hear you. Cool. What is the biggest purchase you made in the last year?
Biggest purchase I've made in the last year.
Yeah. So we're March 2024.
Good question. Holiday to America.
Holiday. Ooh, that pricey, isn't it? I've always wondered about going to America, and I've always envisioned that you need to have at least five bags aside.
Depends how what type. Depends. You know, how would you like to fly?
Yeah.
How long are you going for? What city are you going to, and what type of hotel do you want to do, and what kind of excursions?
Yeah.
So it all depends on the individual. Mm. Like, you know, it's like how, what how out there do you want to be, kind of thing, and you know, what type of experience do you want to have?
Yeah.
Because for certain experience, even $5,000 is not enough.
Exactly.
For a certain type of experience, $5,000 is more than enough.
Exactly. So, what city did you go to?
New York.
Ooh, how was that? Was that good to move?
Yeah, it was good. I went with my wife, so nice. It was me and her. Pretty cool, you know, very motivational for me personally.
Was it?
So, yeah, I feel like New York is like London on steroids.
It inspires you to go get in it.
even the homeless don't sit and beg. Even they're on the move. It's like, right, you don't even have time to actually beg.
Yeah.
So I said, wow, what a city.
Mm. Now, that's serious, man. So next question. If you could enforce one law in the UK and everyone has to abide by it, what would it be? I'm going bigger these questions.
Yeah, I don't think about things like if I could enforce one law.
So something that everybody had to do.
It would have to be it would be mandatory for financial literacy to be taught. That would be like one of the mandatory subjects.
Yeah.
So it would be a subject called financial literacy, and it would cover everything from financial protection to investments to, you know, retirement, savings, management of money.
Serious. And the last one, what is the best piece of advice that you ever received?
God. What's the best piece of advice?
Yeah, you ever received? Or like...
That's hard, I mean, I'm almost 30. That's a lot of...
It could be in the last year, like... The one that stays with you, like, oh, to be fair, yeah. That was deep. Well, that moved the needle for me.
one that stays. I think it's more like, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two. There's what my dad always used to say, let your yes be yes and your no be no. So that always stays with me. It's like that. And the other one, you know, choose your hard. It's hard to be rich, it's hard to be poor. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to struggle and it's hard graft to you know, to have the lifestyle that you want.
Yeah.
So choose your hard.
Yeah. That's true. That's deep. On the first one you mentioned though, is that essentially mean like be a man of your word essentially?
Yeah, like let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Yeah, it's no is no.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that, it makes life real easy for me because nothing's harder than pretending. You know how easy it is to be yourself. So being yourself in every aspect of your life makes life easy. You attract the right people because you're being yourself, right? So you're not being a version that people want. The people that will gravitate towards you genuinely also think like that and respect those views. Secondly, you know, you're not going to be exhausted pretending, because imagine pretending for 10 years and then in year 11, you want to be yourself. Now everyone says you've changed.
Now you've changed.
It's like, no, I haven't changed. I'm actually being myself now. So, man. You know.
Exhausted. No, but that was great to a quick five questions. I wanted to obviously jump into, of course, like you and you know what you do and the services that you provide. So as like a financial protection advisor, if you were to like summarize your role, how would you do it?
In short, I make sure people have the right policies that they need to protect themselves and their families financially, as well as safeguarding their financial future.
So that's like that, and I'm assuming it that like infiltrates in different areas like life insurance, or health insurance, or so on and so forth.
Correct.
Yeah. So how did you kind of get into the industry of the protection, financial protection? That is.
Good question. I mean, well, so first, when I was like 15, 16, my dad passed away.
Okay.
So literally right before like my final exam. Okay. Like, and he didn't have life insurance or anything like that. Now, luckily, my family didn't have to beg on GoFundMe or anything like that. But, you know, they were able to put that together. Now, fast forward maybe 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Finished university, all of that. Working in recruitment. And a friend of mine, a colleague of mine that were working together, we hadn't been there for like more than a year. And I'll never forget. It was like November, you know how November is. It's just dark all month round. Like, you know, by the time you've woken up to go to work, it's dark. By the time you get home, it's dark. It's horrible, really. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
And he comes into work one day, and like in the morning, we have like our little, you know, break sessions where we play pool. Okay. And we're playing pool and he's like, oh, by the way, Ayo, I'm buying my first house, you know. I'm like, oh, okay. That's nice. Like, I mean, I don't know how you're buying a house with the way you, do you know what I mean? Like, with the way that you spend money, what we earn, like, you know. And I'm so, but then at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, maybe he's buying like up north, innit? Must be mad cheap or something. Like, you know, you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, how? Like, where? And he was like, oh, I'm actually buying my first house in Tunbridge Wells, three bed. Bear in mind, he's like 22 years old. So it's like, who buys a free bed for their first house, like that. Do you know what I mean? You've only been working for a year or two, and I know how you spend money, trust me. You're not, you know, you're not the one to save. And then with that, I was like, how, like, was it bank of mum and dad, you know, like, is it, you know, are you sure it's your first house? Are you just pulling my leg? He's like, no, like, no bank of mum and dad, this way it is. And I said, so how? And he's like, well, what happened was my granddad died 2 weeks ago, and he had life insurance and stocks and shares and stuff like that. And he said, obviously, the money's paid out already to his mum. And then his mum and dad have decided, rather than wait till they get old to give him his inheritance, they will give him the leg up and the advantage, and you know, to get a head start. And obviously, I'm curious and I'm inquisitive. So I didn't just leave it there. I was like, so how much did they give you? And what I respect about him, he was so honest about everything. Like, do you know what I mean? He could have lied. He could have said, oh, I'm buying my house because I worked hard or what have you. He could have said anything. Like, do you know what I mean? How am I going to verify or prove it?
Yeah.
But he was so honest about it. And he was like, oh, you know, they gave me 126 grand. So from then, he bought a free bed. He rents out two of the rooms, stays in one. He never paid a mortgage.
Just like that.
You're mortgage free, you got a house, I'd say, from an inevitable situation. So once I saw that,
so
fast forward a couple of years, further.
Yeah.
You know, I was then introduced into the industry by someone that was an advisor himself.
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of industry. You don't really apply for it. You need someone to open a door for you, type of thing. So, he introduced me to it. And then ever since, it's coming up to what, about 2 years now?
Yeah. So, from there. Yeah. It's so interesting that you say that, because you mentioned that it is inevitable. Like, it's inevitable that everyone's going to pass. So it's like the forward planning and the forward thinking of, okay, cool. In this event that's going to come, how are we prepared? How are we set up? And it's interesting that you mentioned that. So I did want to ask, so like, in your opinion or in your time in the industry, what would you say like is the biggest factor as to why people who don't have life insurance, or what's like stopping them from like investing in it? Is it like a knowledge thing, or you think it's like a not seen as important?
You want to say it? You want to answer it honestly or politically?
Both.
honestly. Political answer would be, oh, you know, maybe they just you know, they don't believe in it. But the honest answer, what I generally think, it's ignorance. Ignorance, selfishness. Now, obviously, if you actually don't know about it, this doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
However, for those that have heard about it multiple times, you know, even once, do you know what I mean? Because when Usher released these tickets, he didn't need to say it twice. Do you know what I mean? You heard the tickets were coming online, and boom, went.
You were in the queue. You
understand? You didn't need to look into it. You didn't need to do anything. You understood the concept straight away. It's a celebrity coming to perform and must be there. That's it. Yeah, you didn't need to, you know, become a philosopher or anything. You need to go into deep study. Like, and you have other insurances. Like, to be honest, it's just ignorance. And and if it's not ignorance and they know, then they just don't care. Like, that's the truth. They don't care. Because, every person shows you what they care. Just look at someone's bank statements. They'll tell you what they care about. Because check those bank statements. It will tell you what they value. Because you are allocating and deciding how that money is going to be managed, what that money is going to go towards, and what it won't go towards.
Yeah.
And you've decided it's better that it goes towards this rather than this.
Yeah.
So that's the truth. Like, they don't care at the end of the day, and they're not forward thinking.
Yeah, it's interesting. On that point as well, because all the different types of insurance that we have, like you said, like car insurance, some people have like house insurance, like, so, and the things that you value, you do insure. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting why there's a gap between that and life insurance. But yeah, I would say, like, I guess from my point of view on it, it's not something that I always, I was aware of, like, growing up, but it's something that, like, I would say over the past few years that, like, you hear more of as you get older, and something that, and it's like, yeah, like, as a, in the future, like, you know, when I'm a parent, I would invest in it. But I wanted to touch upon wills, because wills are quite interesting, like, especially in, like, as you mentioned, in the, like, Nigerian community. Because it's like, personally, I don't really have the courage to talk to my dad about wills. You know what I mean? Like, I'm being real. I don't have the courage to go, Dad, like, you're getting on now. Like, this is what makes sense for us to do. Because it just feels like, oh, like,
you can't. You're the tonight's
one. Before, you're preparing me for, do you know what I mean? But it's like, is that like an ignorant way to think?
I mean, if you're afraid to prepare to die knowing that you're going to die, doesn't that sound ignorant? Why would you not, do you know what I mean? That would be like saying, I have an exam coming up. I don't want to prepare for it because I don't want my exam to come forward.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
The same way you would expect someone that knows they have an exam coming up, why wouldn't you prepare as early as possible for that upcoming exam?
Yeah.
That's how I see it when someone says, I'm going to wait till I'm 60 to get life insurance because I feel like I'm going to die closer to that time. That's do you know what I mean? That's not wise.
Yeah.
Whereas if you, and the other side is it as well, yeah, why it's better to do things early. Because you're going to have choice at that moment in time. Versus, you know, it's better to prepare rather than be like, oh, yeah, I need to prepare. I should have. I don't know why I didn't. I mean, you won't really be saying that because you've passed away. Yeah. Your actual family would be saying, why didn't you prepare? Because that lack of preparation is going to lead to stuff that you don't want to happen. And that's one of the things as well. A lot of people don't know actually how these things go when it happens. So when we're saying you know, get your life in order now. And they're like, no, I'll do it later. Then untimely death and whatnot. And then now all of a sudden, everything that we told you to get, you know, in order, you're now having to battle the government for the very same things.
Yeah.
So, and then now when you're standing in court, you know, going through probate and having to, you know, argue as to why your dad's belongings should go to you and not, you know, King Charles, you're there thinking, wow, if my dad had actually just set aside an hour or so, you know, at any point in life, we wouldn't even be here.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going through a 9-month probate. Do you know what I mean? An hour or 9 months later, we're having to fight tooth and nail for stuff that you shouldn't be fighting for.
Yeah, but how would you approach it though? So for someone, like a young person who has heard this conversation, I think, wow, and that is, I want to have that conversation. How would you say they should have that conversation or approach their parents in that regard? In our community as well, by the way.
Boy, in our easiest way, getting a professional, because then it's not you, innit? First of all, you know how your parents are.
Yeah.
If your parents are people, you know, with an open door policy and it's like, you know, you can speak about anything, you can speak freely.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, go to them and tell them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's not that I want anything bad to happen, but it's going to happen. Now, we can either prepare for it and be in our best position possible, or we can not prepare for it and then you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to now have an unfavorable or undesired situation occur.
Yeah.
Now, if your parents aren't like that and, you know, it's bare hard, you can be like, oh, do you know what? I want you to speak to this person. They specialize in, you know, estate planning and, you know, financial protection.
Yeah.
No one's going to say they don't want to protect their finances when you word it like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unless they're genuinely
ignorant,
I don't want to protect my finances. But, you know, and then from there, you can have the professional.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a stranger, right? It's not. I'm not going to feel like that talking when I'm talking to your dad, like, sir, you need to do this because this is the outcome of you not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, also you want me to die. No, I don't want you to die. In fact, like, whether you do it or not, it doesn't affect me. It's going to affect your family, though.
That's
the realness about it. Like, even though I'm doing all this for you, I'm not the name, you know, I'm not a beneficiary. I'm not on the will. Nothing is getting passed down to me. So whether you do it or not, at the end of the day, when your family starts sending GoFundMe links to me, I'm not paying it. Because I'm telling you now, like, I told you, like, don't send me the GoFundMe because I'm not going to donate. Why? Because it doesn't need to get there. Like,
it needs to be like that.
Yeah, it doesn't. Like, do you know what I mean? You've got a Netflix subscription, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
You could spend that same amount on financial protection. You could spend that same amount on life insurance and have a decent enough insurance to pay for your funeral. So there's no excuse. Like, there's...
Priorities, right?
Because there's no excuse. You pick the budget. Where else in the world do you get to determine price? When you buy a new watch, a new phone, anything, you don't go there and Apple say, so, you know, what do you want to pay? You tell us what you can spend and we'll make a phone for that price. There's nothing like that. They tell you, this phone costs this, this costs this, this costs this. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Whereas at least here, you can say, do you know what? You know, I only got £10 a month. You can get something for £10 a month. That will be enough.
So, on that point, then, so... Like, someone who knew nothing about life insurance. So, you can set up and have, like, amount that you pay every month, and it's, like, an amount that you choose, right?
You choose, yeah.
Is that possible? Okay.
I didn't know that. So, how we work, it would be a consultative basis. So, it's like, right, what is your budget?
Okay.
Your budget is this. Now, bear in mind, just because you say you've got time, it does not mean you can get the most... You're going to get what you can get for that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so it's now down to you to decide what's more important, how much I'm spending monthly or how much I'm going to get paid out.
Yeah.
That's for the individual to decide.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you should always do something that you can afford. Please do not go around trying to impress people and say you've got 5 million life insurance, but the monthly premium is killing you.
Yeah, it don't make sense.
You know, within reason, right? Yeah. So once you've done that and you speak to a professional... Like myself, they will tailor-make the policy to your needs, do all the running around for you, find the best provider, bish, bash, bosh. You answer some yes or no questions. It's literally like multiple choice questions. Yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. It's done. Like, it's one of the easiest processes in the world, but for some reason, people may think it's so complicated.
Yeah, and just on that as well, what age, like, would you say is the best age to, like, start? Or, like, let's say, for example... You have an adult, you've got children. Is there like a good age where you start thinking about it, or as soon as possible? Like, how would you say?
I would say as soon as possible, if I'm being honest, because I'm sure you know people that have died before the age of 25. Dying at 25 and dying at 65, the funeral home will still charge both. There's no death that's free to cover. The plot of land cost is the cost of the plot of land. The tombstone is the cost of the tombstone. The hearse is the, funeral homes don't say, this ain't traveling. Is he under five? Is he? There's nothing like that. Once you die, the space is the space. The cost is the cost. So, if you're 18 and above and working, you're old enough. You are old enough.
Yeah.
And on top, if you did it at that age, the what you would be paying, you know, in comparison to someone that's 25, in comparison to someone that's 30, 40, 50, etc., would be so different. You know, and on top, bear in mind, with insurance, it's not a 1 year thing.
Yeah.
If you start early, you're locking in a great deal for
up until.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
Because where people go wrong is when they say stuff like, oh no, I'll think about it closer to the age. Like, do you know, I'm too young now, I'll wait till I'm 60. Yeah, when you're 60, the quotes that you're going to get, that you're going to be getting, are going to be stupid.
If that's just a small amount of
time, yeah.
Theoretically, right?
Do you know what I mean? You're higher risk, right?
Yeah.
So why would I give you a great, it's going to be, you know, you're going to end up in a situation where, for example, let's say you're 23 and you wanted £1 million insurance.
Yeah.
Let's say that, you know, you wanted to cover yourself for 50 years. That's going to cost you maybe £50 or something a month, which if in comparison, £50 a month, you multiply it, it's nowhere near £1 million for you to get £1 million back, which is great. You wait to 55, that same, you know, £1 million, you're probably going to be, someone's going to probably quote you, you know, £250, £300, £400.
Yeah.
And on top, think about it, £300, £400, and it's not even like you're covering yourself for 60 years. You're even covering yourself for a shorter period of time.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So now the 23-year-old that starts at 23, when he gets to 65, he's still paying £50.
And he still has, and he has the equity built up, right? And
starting
earlier is the best, isn't it? But it just, I guess it's about, but then, like, if I were the pessimist, I'd say, that's easy to say, but when I'm young and I'm trying to, like, work and build and save, and I got all my bills and responsibilities, that is, like, it might not seem like a lot, but that's still quite a bit eating into the priorities that I have right now, that I have to prioritise right now.
Hey, like I say, if they pass away, it'll be their family, and it's not me.
Mm.
Like, I'm not here to like argue with them. Like, it's common sense, because that same person has other expenses. Like when it gets to stuff like this, people start talking like they don't have expenses. Like, that person probably drives. Mm. That person is probably paying has a finance car, meaning they have a car that they technically can't afford. You know, because you're paying off monthly and you're paying interest. So as the car's losing value, you're paying even more than the car's worth in the beginning.
So you're not for finance cars?
No. I don't have one. I don't need one. Do you know what I mean? You're going from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's true.
Why are you... like, me, personally, I'll be like, why am I paying every month here for this for the car? Like, why am I doing that?
I hate you.
Why am I paying every month for this? Like, just to go to point A from point B? What else am I getting out of it?
Yeah, I hate you. I guess the reason why a lot of people do it is because the alternative is buying a car outright.
So they should buy what they can afford, right?
Mm.
You see, it's not that they can't buy a car, right? It's that the car that they can't afford. Do you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, your paying finance on a car that's probably worth 12 to 20 grand. Evidently, you don't have 12 to 20 grand because you don't even, do you know what I mean? You're probably making, let's say, 30 to 40 grand.
Mm.
How are you spending half of your salary on a vehicle that's only meant to get you from point A to point B and has... And it still has other costs to maintain in the process.
Car insurance, your road tax, your petrol.
Do you know? You see what I'm saying?
You make
40 grand a year before tax. You don't even make that after tax.
Mm.
And you think that it's wise to go and spend 20 grand on a car. Of course you're going to be on finance. Because it don't make sense. You've taken half of your yearly wage to go put on a vehicle that has other costs on top.
Mm.
Obviously, it don't make sense. So that's, it's not a situation of, I had to. No, you didn't have to. You could have said, I make 40 grand. Let me do 4 grand. Like, you know, you'll get a car that works, that functions.
Yeah.
And it's one and done. You don't need to think about it. Let's say you have to save up for 3 months or something. You save up for 3 months, put some money aside, you're done.
Yeah.
You now don't have an extra outgoing cost.
Every month.
Every month as well.
adds up, man. It adds up.
Yeah,
adds like, up. It's interesting that. It's interesting, man. And I think, so, you know, with the life mission, of course, I think we've touched upon that. So, essentially, the basic premise of it is that you put a portion of money aside every month, and then in the event that you pass on, with the built-up funds, it goes to your family, right?
It's not the built-up funds. Okay, it's life insurance is essentially how, like, car insurance works.
Okay, cool.
Just that the thing that's being protected is your life.
Okay.
So life insurance is you saying, if I die with, especially if it's term cover, if I die within, between this age that I've taken out the policy and the age that the policy expires, my family gets X amount. Prime example, it would be like you saying to me, right, okay, I'd like $500,000 life insurance. You know, I make 50 grand a year. I want to leave my family with 10 years salary, basically, as a lump sum. Okay, to what age do you want to be covered till? If you're smart, you'd say 90.
Why?
You're just giving yourself more chance.
Or more.
Yeah, like
longer period. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Why would you only do it for a short period? Once you pay them, you don't get the money back.
Okay, cool.
You know, so you want it to be as long as possible so that it's as guaranteed as possible.
Yeah.
Assuming you ain't got the money to do whole of life. Whole of life is guaranteed, but.
What does whole of life mean? What's the difference?
The difference between term and whole of life is whole of life is your whole life.
Okay, cool.
So if you go and live to be 150 years old, as soon as you pass away 150, it pays.
Okay.
It doesn't matter when you die, it's guaranteed to pay out.
What does the other one mean?
Term is within a term.
Okay,
it's you saying, if I die before the age of 90, it pays. If I live past 90, it's once you get to 90, it expires.
That's quite interesting. So what if, like, if I did the term at 25, I did it to 90, and I get to 89, I might start thinking, like, is it better if I go? Because all that time wasted.
Nah,
all that funds that I've been paying, I won't see the fruits of it.
Well, you're, again.
Decision to make, right?
It's your decision to make. And, and remember, this is the mindset of the unknown, because you don't know when you're going to pass away.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the mindset of, I don't want them to be in a position where I thought I would live to 100, I didn't. Now they're on GoFundMe saying, if only you could give us whatever.
I guess it's kind of like the idea of...
And it's like car insurance, right? Think about it. Who says, right, I've been paying car insurance for 25 years. In year 30, I want to crash.
Yeah, I get it.
Do you understand?
Yeah. Like, how you view it. Yeah,
like there's no one's got the mind of, don't worry, I'm going to stop driving at some point so I can stop paying car. No.
Yeah. You just pay it.
You plan to drive forever.
In the protection of life forever. I would say that, like, we have to change our viewpoint of it. It's not as, like, it's not something you pay for a payout. It's you pay it to protect you as you live. That's
a better way to view it.
Yeah.
And then on top, when you just look at data statistics and likelihoods, you know, what I say to people is, you know, life insurance is one of the easiest ways to leave generational wealth.
In what sense?
Put it to you this way. Oh, I mean, if you had a pen, it would have been good to just draw on that board. But
yeah.
Okay, let's imagine this, right? I'll play out to you. How many siblings do you have?
Three other siblings.
Three other siblings, right? Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm going to show you how life insurance would turn your family into multimillionaires by the fourth generation.
Okay.
So let's start with your parents, right? All your siblings. Your parents, you know, there's four of you, right?
Yeah.
So let's say your parents did, they did $500,000 of insurance each.
Okay.
Let's say they both lived till 89.
Okay.
Reasonable age, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll be content with that.
Yeah.
Let's say they live to 89.
Yeah.
It means that by the time they get to 89, that's £1 million that's just been passed down to you guys.
Yeah.
Now, let's assume that they've done it with me, so it means we'll be in a trust. So you guys wouldn't pay inheritance tax.
Yeah.
There's no capital gains, there's no income tax. So $1 million has been shared between the four of you already.
Yeah.
So let's say your family net worth is already at $1 million now. Now, let's say the four of you all have spouses, right? And all of you all had $500,000 insurance each.
Yeah.
You see how that $1 million now has now turned to $5 million.
Hmm.
Because all four of you, all eight, that's eight people now.
Yeah.
So, but that's $5 million, you know. So already, just your parents and your siblings and their partners of all of that have accumulated. That's $5 million for your parents' grandkids, for your kids already.
Just like that.
Now imagine now all four of your siblings. Let's say you all had two kids each.
Okay.
That's now what, eight kids? if them and their spouses all did $500,000, that's $8 million.
But a pessimist would say,
you see how simple that it's just what it is, like. It's
I hear
like,
you, I hear you that. But the pessimist would say, how much would I have to pay each month to get $500,000 passed down?
Depends on their age. Depends on your age, your health. Like I say, the younger you do it, the cheaper it will be to do that.
Yeah.
The older you are, the more expensive it will be to do that.
Yeah.
That's why the key is to do it. You see, it's doing it young locks in a better price.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It's kind of like, it's like buying train tickets. Mm. If you buy it during peak hours, it will cost more than off peak.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Peak ages and off peak ages. Mm. The younger you are, the less peak it is.
Yeah.
The older you are, the more peak it is. So it's yeah. You know, if you're smart, instead of you looking at, right, I'm gonna spend £30.
Mm.
Well, see it as you're gonna get £30 for a better deal versus you're gonna spend £30 anyway when you're older and get nothing.
Yeah.
Or get less.
Mm.
And then you're just gonna be sitting there thinking, wow, there's someone else that spent the £30 that's, you know, getting this cover. Versus, oh no, I wanted to delay 10 years of spending £30 to then wait, and then now my £30 doesn't really get me much. Versus, no, I paid £30 10 years earlier, but I'm still paying £30 now 10 years later, and I've still got great cover.
Yeah.
And you know, you just have to, look, life is it's very, very simple, it's very straightforward. Let's even say you don't have life insurance, right? Let's take life insurance out of the picture. When you die in the UK, your debts don't die with you. So, just that alone, when you die, your debts are now rolling over to your family. The same person that also doesn't want to do life insurance because they don't think they're going to die. They don't know when they're going to die. Now you've passed away, you see how it's going to be a shock to you as the person that's passed away. It's a bigger shock to your family because you're going to find out first before they do anyway because you're the person that's passed away. Now, when the shock and the news gets to your family, they're not prepared for it either.
Yeah.
The only person that can prepare for it is you because they're not prepared for it. So now what? All your debts have just rolled over to them, especially your car finance as well, because that doesn't go away. They're just going to tell your family, so do you take back the car or are you going to continue paying the finances? So there's that. Then let's say, you know, all your outstanding council tax, all your debts and loans, nobody even knows that you were, you know, renovating your house. Now they're going to find out you're renovating your house and you've got a 20K loan to renovate your house. These people were minding their business, you know, not renovating their house. They were managing their money well. Now all of a sudden, your debts have been inherited. Then on top, they've got to find money to bury you, do the funeral, and everything that comes with it. And then they're all sitting there saying, so where are we getting the money from? That's you not having life insurance. Or you can have life insurance. Everything is the same. Except that now, no, I've actually left a pot of money to take care of everything. That's you now. Leaving a pot of money that takes care of everything for them to not have to worry about it. So they can genuinely grieve. Not that their workplace is asking them, oh, so do you need to, you know, take all the time that you need, we're here for you. And then they're there saying, no, I need overtime to pay for the funeral. So now people can't even grieve peacefully.
It impacts, like it impacts everything else around it because, it doesn't allow you to actually grieve. Now you're thinking about how you're going to find it.
Now you're thinking about how you're going to find the money to come and deal with the situation. So you can't even actually grieve.
You can't really grieve.
And then on top, you're still thinking about how you're going to have the most lavish funeral reception. But now the rice is tight. You know, people are only holding on to one spoon of rice because the money ain't there.
It's tight, I think it's a tricky one. And I think it's one that, like, I think over time, as a community, it's something that we will improve on. Because I feel like as, let's say, Black Brits, right? I think as the, let me say the Black British economy, as it grows over time, and as, you know, as really and truly, we're the first generation here, right? So you'd expect that over time it grows and it gets better, and as Black starts, businesses and enterprises and so on and so forth, you would hope and assume that over time it's something that, because if you think about it, and I had this conversation on the last episode, a lot of our parents came to this country on survival mode.
Oh, understandably, yeah.
So no one had that, like, who's thinking about life insurance and I'm trying to sort out now, whereas now we've had the luxury of, okay, a bit of comfortability, decent jobs. Okay, cool. Let's start building. Okay, now start having, expanding our mind financially and with investments. I did want to say though, so with, you know, when it comes to that, you come to the age where you're passing on, let's say you go unexpectedly, all your life savings, where does that go?
See, this is why you need a will and stuff like that. Because once you pass away now, it's now a battle of who gets access to these bank accounts.
Yeah.
Remember, who knows your PIN? Who knows anything? It's been a secret all this time.
That's not true.
And then that's what... Yeah. See, then this is what they now call your estate.
Yeah.
Everything that you own, ever had... It now goes into your estate, and then it's now a battle between you and the government for this.
Okay.
Now,
is that how wills? So, like, you know, like, with a will, like, am I able to just put a certain amount of cash in a will? Like, how does it, like, practically kind of work?
Well, a will is an expression of your wishes.
Okay.
So, what you want to do more than a will is probably have a trust.
Okay.
Assuming, you know, it's assuming you have enough assets and it's worthwhile, because. Really and truly, truth be told, most people don't really have anything to leave.
Okay.
Like, you know, if they had life insurance, at least then you'd be able to leave an inheritance that you didn't even work for.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, like I say, why work for an inheritance when you can buy one, right?
Mm.
Anyway, Sean. But, you know, if you had a trust, what you'd be doing, you'd be making that process a little bit easier, because with a trust, you have trustees. These are the people that you trust to execute your wishes, which would be in your will.
Yeah.
And then you have your beneficiaries. These are the people that you expect to receive the various things. So, you know, there's lots of things you can put in a trust. You can put your property, your businesses, money, all of those kind of things.
Want your trust. Okay, yeah. I've heard a lot about, of course, like, in my, like, if I were, like, I'm watching, like, a TV show, and they'll speak about, oh, like, use a trust so you can pass on those things without getting inheritance tax. As inheritance tax has been, like, a big topic in the UK recently, like, how they're trying to... increase it and so on and so forth. So it's something that you definitely want to avoid if you can, obviously, through those schemes. But now it's interesting though. So I guess you know, with health insurance, how is that similar? How does that kind of work?
So
in conjunction with everything else.
So I deal with private medical insurance. So private medical insurance, you know, NHS is great and everything. Some people will say otherwise. You know, that it's not. However, with private medical insurance, you're just more in control.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's better for you, because with the NHS, you hear people talking about how they're on waiting lists for like 2 years.
Ages, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How could I be waiting for a treatment for 2 years? Where if I had private medical insurance, one, you can handpick your consultant, you can pick the hospital, you can pick the time and date. You've got so much control. And it's just, you know, the NHS, it should be better, it could be better, this, that, the other. I'm one of those people that, rather than complain and say what someone should do, I rather investigate and find out what I can do to affect the situation. So, you know, instead of me saying, you know, oh, the government should do this and do that, I'd rather be like, okay, so what can I actually do? What's out there? Because there's a group of people that aren't complaining, they're doing.
It's quite interesting. I think, with the health insurance, it's something that, like, is not overly, I would say...
promoted.
But it's something that, like... I've got people that, so my sister, for example, she has health insurance, so she would be able to have access to, like, a private nurse or doctor, like, even for, like, mental health things. So, like, if you want to talk to, like, a counsellor or a therapist, like, it's all in that package. So, it is very useful, but, of course, like, if you're, like, if you're just kind of just getting by, you may as well try it. NHS will probably be your...
your best bet.
You know what I mean? Your first go-to... But it's interesting to hear about that, the whole world of life insurance, because there's a lot to it. There's a lot to it, and it's not something that is spoken about a lot, but I think the conversation is growing. And I think it's something that, you can get bigger and bigger. I did want to touch upon our Hot Topics lineup. So it's usually like a part of the episode where we touch upon like different stories that are going around across the world and in the UK as well. So during the week, I was reading in CNBC, and there was a report that said that over 63% of young adults are interested in investing in the stock market and in goods, but aren't able to, as they're like, daily expenses and I guess cost of living really is like, is overbearing, and it's just like almost it's in a place where there isn't enough I guess the capital to put aside for like investments. I wanted to ask you, like, how do you feel about like investing as an avenue to build wealth?
It's one of the best avenues, if not the best avenue.
Yeah,
you know, investing is a must. Like, you know, I heard someone say, one income is too close to none. Like, it's too close to none. Yeah, you know,
it is.
Like, investing doesn't, you see, I think what happens here, where people go wrong, is that they want to, they, it's like they envision a particular level or like a particular type as the only.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be Grant Cardone or Warren Buffett to start investing. Yeah. You can invest as little as £100 a month. £100 a month is like, you know, over 30 days, it's just over £3 a day. £25 a week, you can do that. Now, let's say you can't do that. Then do £20 a month, £5 a week. There's something that you can do.
Can do, yeah.
And gradually, as time goes on, as you have more and more disposable income, then increase.
Yeah.
You don't need to say, right, if I can't start on a grand a month, then I can't do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's the part where I'll say they have no excuse. Mm. So it's like, look, if you've got a spare £5 a week, you can do that.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping you. Yeah. You know, yes, you're not buying a whole stock. Yes, in fact, it will probably take you months just to get a whole stock. Yeah. But that £5 will be growing better than it would be, you know, sitting in your account.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just about where you are now, do what you can where you are. As things increase with them.
Yeah.
Versus saying, I will only start
when I'm
at the highest point. And that point you might not even ever get to. Whereas at least with the £5, let's say you were there £5, you know, a week, £20 a month for 30 years, you're better off saying, I'm going to wait 20 years before I can do 1,000.
Yeah. Because
at least compound interest would push that.
Be in your favor.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. It's really interesting because like the investments things is it's something that I talk about a lot with my friends. And I've been investing for like a few years now. And yeah, like you just see, it allows you to really see and visualize like the potential for growth. And like it can just like shift your finances in a way that like you've been able to do like by the saving. Because how this country, well, to be fair, I wouldn't even say this country, how finances and the world is set up, like saving will only take you so far. Like you need to know like a way to like accelerate your I'd say your income really. So yeah, it's a key thing that's important, man. And the thing the stats said that only so over 60% of people, the young people they said, are interested but aren't able to. It just shows that I think the picture around it or the narrative around it is changing and it's seen as something, okay, cool, it's something like that we should be doing, but maybe we just can't yet. So yeah, it's interesting, man. Yeah. I think there was another one I saw throughout the week, actually, and it's actually on Twitter. So there was a conversation going around here about how in workplaces, if you are married or you're seen as someone who's settled down, it heightens the chances of more senior roles, and how like in some firms, all the senior positions will only be people who have settled down. You think that's true as a perspective thing in terms of like, a decision making.
Yeah, I think it plays a role because marriage is deemed as, you know, it has a positive esteem about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's not easy to be married. There's a lot of people that want to be married that aren't married, can't be married, well, for whatever reason. And, you know, marriage is one of the, you know, biggest forms of commitment. So
you ever make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Biggest form of commitment and decision making.
Yeah.
Because you have to pick one person and then commit to that person with everything that comes with that person.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a sense of responsibility with it, right?
Yeah.
You know, like a family, you know, marriage will tend to naturally, you know, lead to maybe a family,
children,
things like that. So now if you've got someone that's like, right, he's been married for, you know, a decade, you know, he's got a whole family and whatnot. You also have an element of he's got skin in the game. He's got something to lose. You know, he's not going to be as maybe risky as a single bachelor that's living, you know, on a bachelor pad, like a Harvey Specter kind of guy. Do you know what I mean? It's a bachelor with half a million living in a penthouse.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? He's going to say, yeah, I'm going to go, you know, do whatever. Like, I'm only responsible for one.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the married person is, you know, responsible for many. So it's like, right, if you're responsible for many in this scenario, maybe there's some transferable skills to go to this scenario.
That's true.
Now,
that's quite deep.
For people, yeah, because I know people are also not going to just take it as that and get offended and whatnot because of their own personal situation if they're not married. Now, what you have to understand is in life, things, decisions are made based on probability.
Yeah.
So, not, yeah. Yeah, because they're going to be like, oh, so what? Just because I'm not married, does that mean that I'm a bad decision? No one said you are.
Mm.
However, no one's got a crystal ball to see. So yeah. I've got to use what?
Factors around.
Yeah, I've got to use the metrics available and past data to say, to make an educated guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Like, you know, you're not going to, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just what it is. Like, it's like, you know, you're not going to say, right, I've got, you know, two people applying for a role. One's a serial thief, the other one's not. And then the role is to, you know, come and manage and handle money. Why? Do you know what I mean? Yes. What if that thief has changed? They probably have, but from past experience, do you know what I mean? Is that a wise choice? In terms of probability.
Yeah.
Because yes, you could also hire a person that's never stolen before and then that's their first day stealing.
Yeah.
But what's the likelihood? What's the probability?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what they're probably thinking when they're making these decisions.
Yeah.
It's probably more likely that this guy is going to be more whatever because of...
Sound decision maker.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite interesting that you say that because, you know, when you mentioned the transferable skills, I think that's really, really interesting that, especially in managerial roles where you get to a place of like leadership and skills that you can share with other people, even the elements of mentorship as well. So like you do really say, okay, cool, like a decision maker, sort of at the top, thinking about, okay, cool, this person is in a settled down environment, he's married, okay, are there some skills he's about to bring into this role that'd be useful for our business as well? So, like, you know, when you view it from that lens, it allows you
objectively.
To... Objectively.
You see how it would make sense, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, you're expecting, again, expecting, because nowadays, everything that you say, people can't just understand that.
Yeah, in context, yes, right?
it might be the majority, but not all. There's nothing that's absolute.
Yeah.
But you would be expecting that this person, you know, is going to be... someone of a sound mind, especially, you know, if they've got a stable marriage and stuff like that, because it also works the other way. When someone's going through a divorce, you see how it takes its toll in the workplace.
So yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because, you know, because word will get around quickly. Because when someone's, you know, not doing stuff that you expect and people start asking, hey, why is he behaving like that? Oh, he's going through a divorce. Do you understand?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and then all of a sudden, even when, you know, let's say there's poor performance, there's an understanding, there's a leeway, there's a... Oh, no, he's going for a divorce, man.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah.
So just like how, you know, we can have sympathy when someone's going through a divorce or some sort of separation, it's the same way when it's like, oh yeah, they're married in a stable environment. So we can't say that, you know, it only works in the negative, but not in the positive. Yeah.
You got to take both sides.
It goes with both sides.
Both sides, yeah. It's interesting. You know when you touched upon, like, being married, I wanted to ask, is there, obviously for someone... he's been married. Is there any like advice or insight that you give to like the younger men in our generation or in our, I guess, the community, I should say, that on like finding love or finding your person? Or is your point of view a bit more, this happens how it happens? Like,
I think,
what insight would you give it?
I think the first thing is they need to understand themselves first and ask, do you know what I mean? Understand, like, because I want to say it in practical terms so that it's not cliche, but you know, stuff like purpose and all of that is important.
Yeah.
What I mean to say is this, right? You need to understand what your views, what your beliefs, what your vision for your life and family is first.
Yeah.
If you do that, it makes life so easy when it comes to picking your helpmate, your spouse, because you don't want to be with someone that has a conflicting view. It's dumb. It don't make sense. Like, one of the things that I always ask myself here is like, you know, when you see stuff nowadays on social media or whatnot, and the guy's being asked, so what type of girl do you like? And he says, oh, I like someone that challenges me. I'm like, this person's never been in a relationship or married or been challenged before.
Yeah.
Evidently.
Because
it's like are you listening to, because I feel like it's just like, everyone's heard people say it, so they say it.
Sounds
like, you really want to be challenged all every day. Like, do you know what I mean? You really, every day, like, you say something, someone has a rebuttal, that. Someone has, like, someone constantly goes against you.
You don't really want that.
Who wants that? Like, but it's like, they'll say it, no, I want someone that's challenging, a bit fiery. So you want, like, you basically just want headache and problem. Like, but then that's what you say, you get that person, then you start complaining and it's like, no, you see, you were just following the jargon.
Yeah.
You were just copying what everyone was saying, but you actually weren't thinking of what you were saying.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say it's important that you have someone with similar views is because you can't every... Do you know what I mean? Imagine, like, your day-to-day life is conflicting with this other person all the time. Exhausted. There's not going to be harmony in that.
Exhausted, man.
So it's important to be real, be yourself, because it'll be easy. Like I was saying at the beginning, you know, you will attract the people that are like you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that way, when you're saying, oh, this is what, you know, I stand for, this is what I believe in, this is how I think, you know, the home should be, this is, you know, my... You get someone that will say, yeah, I subscribe to that. I also think that. And then it's natural versus that person is also pretending to subscribe to what you believe. They don't.
Yeah.
And then in their head, don't worry, I'm going to change you in 5 years. 5 years. That's the real you. That's not the real them. Yeah. And then somebody say that somebody is unchanging. Meanwhile, there was pretense. So I think they should first of all figure out what it is that they want to achieve.
Yeah.
And then just reverse engineer and be like, right, what type of person do I want to be? Then you be that person, because you have to also ask yourself, that type of person that you're looking for, what type of person do they like?
Yeah.
Because it's not just what you like. And that's what we tend to see nowadays on social media.
Yeah.
People would be saying that I want this type of person, this, that, the other. And it's like, yeah, but would that type of person want you? And then you're wondering why you don't have that person. Because that person also hasn't a type of person they like.
Everyone's got standards, right?
Do you understand? Everyone's got standards. Like, it's not like some person is just here, just, you know, looking to come and do charity work.
Yeah. It's true. It's quite interesting as well, like, in our generation. I did not also touch upon, before we round up, I did also touch upon pensions. Because during last month, The Guardian reported that the age for state pension is set to rise to 71. What's your views on that? Pensions and like workplace pensions and the amount of like value that we should place on them as we work and grow and earn throughout the years.
I don't want to give my personal. Okay. let me say the facts of pensions. These are the facts of pensions. If you have a 30 grand salary, it means that it took 30. It means that you lived off 30 grand for an entire year.
Yeah.
When you're doing your pension contribution. Is sometimes just about 10%, 5 to 10%, of your yearly salary. I want you to think about that. If for the year you need 30,000 to survive, and then you're telling me you have to work for 10 years in order to have contributed 1 year's salary, even if you worked for 40 years, by the time your pension is done, you've only contributed 4 years' salary. Then in that 4 years that you've amassed, let's say, interest and all of that. Let's say that's what's happened. Fine. Let's now say that 4 years works out to be 10 years salary.
Yeah.
You now have to make 10 years salary that you've lived on your whole life last you for the rest of your life. And on top, you're going to be taxed. So it's not savings. It's not like the whole, you know, money is just there and just spend it as you wish. You're now going to be taxed depending on how much you take out on a yearly basis. Meaning, let's say, for example, you had 250 grand in your pension pot. If you removed 50K, the first, I believe, 20 to 25K, you know, is tax-free. But after that, every time you, let's say you withdraw 50 grand, you're going to be taxed like you're earning 50 grand. So you're thinking, but I've just saved this money, but you're still paying taxes like you're working.
Your pensions are...
It sounded a bit techie now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see why one income is too close to none.
Too close to none.
So really truly...
That could be the title of this episode.
But one income is too close to none.
It's too close.
You need more than one, man.
It's actually too close, man. That's why, like, I've been so big on that, the, like, investing thing. I've got a few friends who are like it as well, because it's like, one is too close to none. Like, and, like, especially because throughout this year already, we've been seeing a lot of... companies and businesses doing layoffs. It happens. Like, I feel like we're in an economy that is like volatile, man. Like, we're in a workforce that is volatile. It can change. Like, you can tune into work on Monday morning to a team meeting and say, sorry guys.
You're the unlucky team that was on the meeting that's going.
Do you know what I mean? And that's just life. Do you know what I mean? So it's like it makes you have to be more agile, more okay, look. Like, I appreciate the job that I have. Thank God for the job that I have. But, okay, cool. How can I move and maneuver in a way where we are protected, as you say, right? Mm-hmm. And you have more, I guess, more legs to stand on. So, yeah.
I mean, you reminded me about something as well that we haven't even touched upon, which is the protection that has living benefits.
Okay.
See, for so long, you've been so fixated on life insurance and dying. So now, it's like the people that don't have financial dependence, they're thinking, oh, well, then that's it then.
Mm.
But what they don't realize, and this one goes for everyone that's 18 and above.
Okay.
This one, if you work and you're 18 and above, this is for you.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. Income protection and critical illness cover.
Okay.
One in two people will have cancer in the UK.
Mm.
That already is a statistic, which is critical illness cover. Now, that's not the only critical illness cover. There's many. There's mental health. It covers mental health issues, stroke, heart attacks, you know, things that could do with the brain, blindness, so many things that happen on a day-to-day, paralysis, all of that. That's a critical illness. And if one in two people are going to get cancer, it means that if they had a critical illness and they got cancer, they'll get payout. Now, if you're thinking, so what's that payout going to do? That payout could be the difference between you being able to renovate your home. Let's say you get, you know, a disability that now you need, you know, some adjustments in the home for you to get around. Where's that money going to come from? If you're just going to be calling the people that are coming to renovate houses and say, oh, could you do it for free? There's nothing like that. That money can go towards that. Let's say you need treatment.
Yeah.
Someone's telling you, yeah, treatment ain't free. If you've got the money, we can do it. If you ain't got the money, sorry. You're just going to continue as you are. That money can get you access to the treatment that you need. Now, with income protection, most people in the UK only have one source of income anyway, which is their employment. God forbid something happens to them where you get sick or you get injured and you can't physically work for a long period of time. Who pays your bills? We all know that the bank ain't forgiving. They're not going to pause your mortgage.
You don't care,
your landlord ain't going to pause the rent. Statutory sick pay is only £439 a month. You tell me whose rent that's going to cover.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
So if they had income protection, what that works as is a replacement for that income. So it's essentially saying, right, if something happens to me and I can't get this income, this will now kick in and act as my income. So the provider will now pay you on a monthly basis a portion of your income to cover your expenses.
Okay. How much would that, I guess
it could be up to like 70%.
All depends, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'm assuming with that, you pay like a premium every month.
Correct.
In the event. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. To protect your income.
Protect your income. That's quite interesting. I've learned a lot today, man. This has been good. I've learned a lot today. This has been a conversation that I'm sure like a lot of people will to learn and take up gems from this, man. I really appreciate you jumping on and of course the work that you're doing. Is there anything else that you'd like for the audience to know about you know, what you do and the services you provide?
Yeah, so if someone's actually looking for a professional and they're like, look, do you know what? I've heard what you said. I actually don't want my family to go beg on GoFundMe when I pass away. I want, you know, to leave my family, you know, with generational wealth or, you know, in a very, very stable financial position where, you know, the fact that I've passed away, yeah, my grandkids or kids, depending on when you pass, can actually go on and, you know, essentially change their life or, you know, not have to miss out on anything financially. Then all they have to do is get in contact. The process is very, very simple. Everything is tailored to their needs. I educate you on all the products available. You're then able to pick and choose what you want and you're able to set your own budget. And what I will do is I will make sure that within your budget, we find a policy that, you know, is best fit for you. And the best thing is that you can, with me, you can cover yourself, you know, for essentially for whole of life if you want, you know. You know, you can go from 70, 80, whatever age that you want to do, essentially, in that regard. And this is also good for people that are thinking, yeah, do you know what? This guy makes sense. I've already got insurance, but what about my mom and dad? Because I see that a lot. Like, everyone that I do, it's like, right, you're wise enough to protect your kids and, you know, your family. But what about your parents? Because if your parents don't, when they pass away, guess who they're going to be looking to? It's you.
You guys, yeah.
Do you know it's going to be you, right? Like, because it ain't them.
Yeah, and they got debt, so things that aren't paid, yeah.
It's passing on to you. So you've worked this hard.
Yeah.
You've done the right thing, got yourself protected. Make sure they get protected. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're looking for someone that can be trusted to do it, I'm the guy. Because at the end of the day, all your policies will be put into a trust, meaning that you're exempt from inheritance tax, capital gains, and income tax. And you've got peace of mind. Like, listen, if anything happens, at least it's not me that has to now just fork out a random 20K.
For no reason. Yeah.
And rather, you'll actually be able to taste and see what it's like, especially for what you're doing. Because imagine you've got cover for your kids, and then your parents goes, and then you now get, you know, a couple $100,000 sent to your account, you'd be like, oh, okay, cool. This thing is real.
Yeah.
This is what I'm actually putting in place for my own kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatnot. So they can reach, you know, they can go on my website.
Yeah.
Noble. Yeah.
We'll put the social medias all in there, but no. It was great having you on, man. Appreciate your time. And guys, of course, if you enjoyed that episode, do make sure that you like, you comment, you subscribe. Of course, we have more conversations coming with people who just have interesting stories, interesting insight to offer. And we keep growing and learning, man. But guys, have blessed weeks, and we'll see you next time. Peace.